Typically on Halloween, you expect to find candy in the bag, but on Halloween in 2015, New York Police Department officers found two submachine guns. Trick or treat.
Bringing you the latest case law updates on the legal aspects of law enforcement. This is Broadcast Blue.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Bruce's Brown Bag Wednesday here on Broadcast Blue, and what I've called the case of the gun and done. This particular case comes to us from the Second Circuit up there in New York, and indeed, this is case originated on Staten Island. This is the 15th edition of Bruce's Brown Bag Wednesday this year, 2018. A case of the week, United States versus Alexander. From the Second Circuit, and the date of the case was May 1st of 2018. So let's take a look at the facts. For those of you who are not watching on the video or the webinar, let me describe the scene for you that's on the screen right now. Alexander lived in a narrow house on Staten Island, and the front door faced the street, and in front of the front door were steps that led down to the sidewalk. It was a narrow house on a very small lot. A short set of stairs led directly to the sidewalk, from the sidewalk to the front door. On the left side of the property was an 84-foot-long driveway that ran perpendicular to the street next to the house on the left as you look at it from the street, all the way alongside the house into the backyard. The driveway extended past the back of the house. And at the very end of this driveway in the backyard was a shed. Alexander used the part of the driveway that was in front of the shed for parking, older cars or other vehicles. But he also used it for barbecues and relaxation. There were some patio furniture, some chairs and some other types of things right in front of that shed. There was a fence, a chain link fence on the left-hand side, on three sides of the property. On every side of the lot except for the front is a fence. On the left's a chain link fence running all the way down the left-hand side, which didn't provide any block of the view. It was a chain link fence. You could see right through it. On the back of the fence is what most people would call a garrison style wooden fence, 6 foot high, which did afford some degree of privacy from the back. And on the right, the property line was right up next to the house, and there was in the very front, there's a garrison fence on the front right as well. But the whole front of the property is open, and you can see all the way down the driveway and actually see in front of the shed standing in the street. So one night, early in the morning, about 3:15 in the morning on Halloween, October 31st of 2015, the defendant in this case, Alexander, was standing in his front yard along with a woman, and he had a bottle of vodka in his hand. And just a few feet away from him, there was a car that was on. It was idling. It wasn't moving, but it was idling, and it was in the street blocking Alexander's driveway. And it's just a few feet away. I mean, the very small front yard area on this small lot on Staten Island. So there's not much space. It's just a few feet away. So about 3:15 in the morning, two NYPD plainclothes officers, Officer Barrero, and I apologize up front, I am not very good at rolling R's in the name, and so I know I'm not pronouncing it correctly, but Barrero and Golat, these two NYPD plainclothes officers approached them, and when they did, they saw the man in the passenger seat in the car attempt to put something into his pants and appeared to them to be a baggie of drugs. So the two officers quickly moved in. They removed two passengers from the vehicle, and they discovered a plastic bag containing a substance resembling cocaine in the man's hand. Well, this man told them that there was more cocaine in the back seat of the car, and so having been told that, they started to search the car for additional drugs. Officer Golat did. While Officer Golat was searching the car, Alexander, who was standing in his front yard, announced that he was going to put the vodka in the back, referring to the back of the house. And so He turned and walked down that driveway that went down 84 feet down the side of the house, and he went towards the backyard. And along the way, the officers noted that he stopped and he picked up a bag that was left next to the house. And less than a minute later, he returned empty-handed with neither the bottle nor the bag. So Officer Barrero decided to look for the items that Alexander had, the bottle and the bag. It's undisputed that he had no probable cause to search the property. But he walked down the driveway, went all the way down the driveway, eventually found the liquor bottle around the back corner of the house right next to the back door. Barrero didn't see the bag at the time, and he returned to the front yard to frisk Alexander. He then walked down the driveway again and went into the backyard in order to search for the bag. Well, he popped out one of those flashlights and all those megalumen lights that the LEOs are fond of. And he's in the backyard. It's 3:15 in the morning. He used his flashlight to look around in the backyard, and he spotted the bag. It was resting on a plastic chair that was sitting right by the front corner of the shed, the corner of the shed closest to the house. So the front right corner, as you see the shed from the street down the driveway, the closest to the house. The chair was only about 4 feet from where he'd found the bottle next to the back door. So there's not that much distance between the back door and the front corner of the shed. So Officer Barrero walked up to the bag, and then he saw the butt of a gun sticking out of it. And he opened the bag, and inside he found two submachine guns. Well, Alexander was arrested. He was charged with one count of being a felon in possession of a firearm in violation of Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 922G, and one count of possessing a defaced firearm in violation of Title 18 of the United States Code, 922K. At trial, Alexander's defense attorney moved to suppress both the guns and the vodka bottle, arguing that Officer Barrero violated the Fourth Amendment by searching the curtilage of Alexander's home without a warrant or probable cause. The district court held a hearing, and the officers and Alexander's sister, who lived with him, testified. And the court ruled, the court granted the motion as to the bottle, holding that the bottle was found next to the back door, and that was in the curtilage. But the district court denied the motion as to the guns, holding that they were not found on the curtilage. They were found in that chair by the corner of the garage, and that was not the curtilage. So the guns were admitted at trial, and the jury convicted Alexander of one count of being a felon in possession of a firearm, and he was sentenced to 51 months, more than 4 years, imprisonment. He appealed the district court's ruling of the guns, and that is the issue that is on appeal to the Second Circuit. So the Second Circuit has to answer the question. It's very specific and it's very direct. Is the area, specifically that chair next to the corner of the shed, is that area where the police discovered the guns in the bag a part of the curtilage of Alexander's home and therefore entitled to Fourth Amendment protection? Now, before we answer this issue, let's take this opportunity to look at a few key cases with the legal blast of the past. And first, let's start with United States versus Jones. And in this case, you might recall the old school definition of a search that we found in the Olmstead decision back in 1928 was resurrected. That physical intrusion by the government on one of the four constitutionally protected areas, persons, houses, papers, and effects for the purpose of gathering information is a search under the Fourth Amendment, which means it has to be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment, which means you have to have a warrant or a judicially recognized exception. So an entry into someone's house, which is a dwelling, it's a home. It's very specific. When they say persons, houses, papers, and effects, houses is a dwelling. So to enter into someone's dwelling is a search under the Fourth Amendment requiring a warrant or a judicially recognized exception. And then in United States versus Dunn, one of our key cases for the concept of curtilage. Now, curtilage, that little French word taken from the French word courtelage, little courtyard, What the concept of curtilage is that some areas of the home are so intimately tied to and associated with the sanctity of the use of the home and the privacies of that use that it's going to be afforded the same degree of protection. So the concept is there are certain areas that are outside of the home that are nevertheless considered part of the house for Fourth Amendment purposes. And in United States versus Dunn, they gave us four factors to help us determine when this situation existed. And the four factors are the proximity of the area claimed to be curtilage to the actual physical building, the home itself. The second factor is whether the area is included within an enclosure surrounding the home. The third is the nature of the uses to which that area is put. And fourth, the steps taken to isolate it, that area from view, from people passing by, people standing where they have a right to be standing, as Keith Hunsucker used to say, right to be, right to see. So the whole concept of whether or not they've taken steps to isolate it. One quick little point, you have to understand too that United States versus Dunn, a 1987 case, was decided when the only definition of a search was the cat search. And so the fourth factor itself kind of plays into the concept, the privacy concept, the invasion of privacy concept definition of a search of cats, more than the physical intrusion definition that we had that came out in Jones decades later. So that's kind of built in, the cats type of consideration. The test is not mechanical. The test does not require that you look at all four of the, you have to have all four, and it's not a mathematical formula. Sometimes you have one that's so high that the other three don't really matter that much. You know, the proximity of the area, I call that the peep and Tom rule of thumb. If you're standing where a peep and Tom would stand, looking in someone's bedroom window from 6 inches away on the side of the house, you're probably in the curtilage. And that the third one, the nature of the uses is in many of these decisions is very, very important to determine the curtilage. Even if it's not close, and even if it's not within an enclosed area, and even if there's nothing taken to isolate it from view, the pure use of it could be help it to become curtilage. For example, when I lived in Millbrook, Alabama, I had a house and I had a huge backyard, and it had a little peninsula that went out into the lake. If I had built a little gazebo on that peninsula, like I'd planned to do if I'd stayed there instead of moving to Florida, if I'd have built a little gazebo on that peninsula and I would have ran power and had a grill out there and screened it in and had parties out there, a little party gazebo, that the nature of the use of that would have made that curtilage, even though it's none of the other three were met. So this isn't a mechanical test. Now in Dunn itself, in the facts in Dunn, there was a house that had a fence around it, but the house was on a 200-acre ranch. And there were other fences around other areas. And the police officers climbed these fences and then looked into a barn without going inside. And they observed what gave them probable cause to believe that it was drug manufacturing going on in there. And that's what led to this concept of these four cases. This is going to be one of the Blue Key cases. When the Blue Key cases come out, and that's going to be one of our cases we're going to talk about done in a little bit more depth. But for today, it's important that you understand these four factors and the sites given to you here, 480 U.S. 294. And you can Google it. The United States versus Dunn decision is very easy to find, even without some type of legal research software. So there you go, the four Dunn factors. And it's important to remember that the concept of curtilage, the Dunn factors are just an assistance. It's just a way for to help the courts determine if the test is met. But the consideration, what the court called the central question in Dunn, is whether the area in question harbors the intimate activity associated with the sanctity of a man's home and the privacy of life, the privacies of life. Do they extend the use of the intimate activity associated with the home into an outdoor area, the front porch, is a prime example. The back patio Maybe you've got a grill back there. I've got a screened-in back porch and then an area patio beyond the screened-in enclosure, and all of that would be curtilage under the Dunn test. And so the concept is the area so intimately associated with the sanctity of the home, and you see that over and over. And it is not a mechanical test. And then another blast from the past, the last one I want to mention. It's hard to talk about a cartilage case without giving you a picture of Frankie. My favorite canine, police officer canine, and that's a picture of Frankie. If you're watching the video, you got a picture of Frankie, very famous police dog down in Miami-Dade, a great dog. But we had the Jardines decision, and remember, the cartilage, again, was defined as the area around the home that is intimately linked to the home, physically and psychologically. So, you get this term intimate, this area that's outside, intimately linked to the home. Some areas are so clearly cartilage that you don't need to apply Dunn factors. And indeed, that was the case in Jardines. In the Jardines decision, although the court fully expressed that, talked about it, but they didn't apply the Dunn factors. The whole concept is that some places you don't need to run the factors, right? They're just it's just so clear that it's cartilage. And standing on someone's front porch at their front door is clearly in the cartilage. That's well defined and very in the case law very much explained and expected. So in Jardines, they physically stood with Frankie, two officers from Miami-Dade, and Frankie physically stood in the cartilage at the front door. And the court said they were in the cartilage, so that's a search under the Fourth Amendment, and so it has to be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. And the two officers relied on the judicially recognized exception called the knock and talk exception, with that limited license at the front door to try and engage in a consensual encounter. But the court said that the knock and talk exception did not apply to Frankie. So Frankie's sniff at the front door was an unlawful search, and it was a bad domino that was in that the search and seizure dominoes. And so the warrant based on the sniff and everything found as a result of that warrant was excluded under the exclusionary rule. And so to go to physically stand into the cartilage is a search under the Fourth Amendment. And so that makes it very, very important in this case. So remember back to this case, is the area where the police discovered the guns a part of the cartilage of his home? Because if it is, then they need to have a warrant or a judicially recognized exception. If it's not, then they don't. If it's not a search under the Fourth Amendment, it doesn't have to be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. But if it is a search under the Fourth Amendment, it has to be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. It's pretty straightforward. So let's take a look at what the court did with the Dunn factors. Now, having everything we've talked about, the principles in mind, let's talk about the Dunn factors. The first Dunn factor, the proximity of the area to the home, the court said weighed strongly in Alexander's favor, because unlike the barn in Dunn, which was 50 yards from the fence around the home and was held not to be cartilage, the area in front of the shed was just a few steps, just a matter of a few feet from Alexander's back door and the area immediately surrounding and associated with the home. So the proximity factor, which is your first factor, favors the favored Alexander. They said the area immediately surrounding and associated with the home is the very definition of cartilage, and they cited Jardines for that, and the government did not disagree. So looking at the second factor, was there an enclosure surrounding the home? And the court said that looking at this factor, it's neutral. Now, this factor seeks to account for divisions in property that the property owner, him or herself, creates within the property. Remember, in Dunn, there was a fence around the house. This is 200 acres. There's a fence all the way around the 200 acres. And then there is a house within that fence. And then there is a fence around the house. And then there is a barn. And there's a fence around the barn. And then there's another fence. There's fencing everywhere. So on a huge piece of property, the fencing can help demarcate the where the cartilage begins and where it doesn't. But on a smaller home, the fence surrounding a residence sometimes serves to demarc specific land, but on this smaller part, it's different. There's a distinction here between having multiple fences, including one fence right around the house on a huge piece of property, and then the fencing that is around a very small lot, one perimeter fence around a small lot. So they said that this was neutral. In fact, the court said the fact that he did have fencing on three sides, including the shed in the back, marking off the home and modest yard and the driveway areas from adjoining property, was, if anything, it supported Alexander to some small extent. So they distinguished this from Dunn. In the third Dunn factor, they looked at the nature and use of the area. And this is when you, along with proximity, the nature and the use is very, very important. And they said the third Dunn factor weighs at least slightly in Alexander's favor. Although the district court found that the top of the driveway, the primary use of the top of the driveway, was for parking cars, it was used at least occasionally for recreation, such as hosting barbecues. And it was continuous with the backyard area behind the house, which the district court concluded was within the cartilage of the home. And therefore, the court said it's an area to which the activity of home life extends, which is the very essence of cartilage. And then looking at the fourth factor, there were no steps taken to isolate that specific area from public view. There's a chain link fence on the left-hand side, so you could see it clearly from the neighbors on the left. And there was nothing obstructing the view right in front of the shed from the street. You could stand in the street and see all the way down the driveway and see the front of the shed as long as there weren't any cars blocking the view. And so this one favored the government. Applying this factor, it favored the government. The court said in their decision, and I'm going to quote them right now, mindful that we need not mechanically apply these factors, talking about the Dunn factors, we hold that the area from which the guns were recovered was part of the cartilage of Alexander's home. Only the fourth Dunn factor weighs against Alexander, and that factor is not dispositive, particularly whereas here the search took place just steps from the home in an area partially used for intimate activities. So this is an example of how that fourth factor can't overcome the first factor and the third factor. I mean, the first and third factors, the proximity and the use, are clearly the most important of the four factors, and you can't overcome the proximity and use with just the fact that no steps at all were taken to isolate it from view. The court noted that both the porch and the immediate back or side yard area abutting a house, especially on a small property like Alexander's, which forces it to be proximately close, are commonly used for family activities, even though they may also be accessible to a limited degree for other particular purposes to visitors, including strangers such as salespersons or police officers. The court held the area is comparable to the porch in Jardines with respect to the third Dunn factor, and a porch like Alexander's driveway is typically open to observation from pedestrians. Therefore, the fourth Dunn factor weighs against the finding of cartilage, but it carries no more weight here than it did in Jardines. So as a result, the court reversed. The evidence used to convict Alexander was deemed to be illegally seized. The court said it was illegally seized and must be suppressed. They vacated his conviction, reversed the denial of the suppression motion as to the guns, and remanded the case for further proceedings. So there's the decision, the cartilage. You got to get it right. And when you're operating in a warrantless environment, you got to get it right. And the court, the Second Circuit, held here that they did not in this particular case. Got the guns off the street, but the decision reversed the conviction, which is not a good thing. So here you go. Bruce's my two cents worth. The cartilage has taken on an increased importance in the post-Jones environment. Ever since January of 2012, as the Jardines case and other cases that involve intrusion in the cartilage clearly point out, especially in the light, all it takes now, there's no issue of privacy. Privacy deals with the definition of a cat search. If you're talking about a physical intrusion into one of the four constitutionally protected areas, privacy is not in the calculus. It doesn't matter. There's no determination as to whether or not there is a subjective expectation of privacy that's objectively reasonable. That's the definition of a search under CATS, not under Jones, the alternate definition under Jones. In the post-Jones environment, the court won't even make an analysis as to whether or not there's REP, although they did in last week's 11th Circuit decision that I'm still kind of in a quandary about. But if you invade the curtilage for the purpose of gathering information, it is going to be a search under the Fourth Amendment, regardless of any type of determination of privacy. And so it's taken on an entirely new significance. The problem is it's really hard to say exactly where it is. There's no mechanical test. I mean, LEOs want to go out and buy their 511 curtilage ruler and flip it out and say, there it is, Fred. Don't step in it. I see it. I see it, Bob. We're still good. That's just not how it works, although it is a line. You're either in curtilage or you're in open fields. You're in one or the other. When you step off the curb into my front yard where I live, you are in open fields. But as you get closer to my house and closer to my front door, at some point you're in the curtilage. When you're at my front door, you're clearly in the curtilage. When you're just over the curb, you're clearly not in the curtilage. So at what point do you go from being out of the curtilage to into the curtilage? It's hard to say. You just have to use the Dunn factors, right? And the closer you get to the house under factor one, and depending on the use of the area that you're standing in under factor three, the more likely it is that you're in the curtilage. But you take a risk. It's a gamble. The court's going to have to determine it, and the court's going to have to look at it. But there's a risk involved when you're on residential property approaching someone's home, because once you're in it, you're in it. And it's a search under the Fourth Amendment, and it has to be reasonable. And you better have either a warrant or a judicially recognized exception, or as we learned from the Second Circuit decision, the evidence gets thrown out. And that's why it's very, very important to understand these concepts of curtilage, which can get really tricky. In some of the cases, like Jardine's, it's really clear. In other cases, it gets a little trickier. In this case, it was a little tricky. They weren't at a front porch, but they weren't on a back porch, but that area, that use, and the fact that it was only 4 feet away on this tiny little Staten Island lot put it close enough, and that partial use, factors one and three really put them over the top there. You got to be really careful with curtilage. It's going to be going to have some training coming out on LEA 1 on curtilage here in the not-too-distant future, so keep an eye out for that. Thank you so much for joining me. Time flies when you're having fun. Keep us right on track, right on the 30-minute mark. And thanks for joining me for this edition of Bruce's Brown Bag Wednesday webinar. And if you're listening on the podcast, thank you so much for tuning in on the podcast. If you're watching the podcast or listening to the podcast on the website, www.broadcast.blue, please sign up. Please subscribe on iTunes and Google Play and have it delivered right to your mobile device, and so you can catch the podcast. I want to let you know I've started a new podcast. It's called Broadcast Blue Shorts. There's already a couple of them up there. And what I do is I take a very, very recent case and I turn it into a podcast. It only lasts between 5 or 10 minutes. So they're about seven and a half minutes. Very, very short, but they just go right in and quickly summarize it, what the case was about, and give you some fundamental information, and then tell you how to find more if you need it, just to cover it, the little Broadcast Blue Shorts. Also, check out the Blue Blog if you haven't done that, case summaries with links to full decisions. A case comes out, I get notice of it, I read it. If I think it applies to the legal aspects of law enforcement, I give you a quick little summary in the blog entry and then give you a link to a full downloadable PDF version of that, and that's a blog. And you can only find that on the website, www.broadcast.blue. We also have the videos of the Bruce's Brown Bag Wednesday webinars. You can find out more information about that on www.broadcast.blue. It's on our Vimeo channel, including past editions of the Bruce's Brown Bag Wednesday webinar. And also, we're starting a Broadcast Blue newsletter, and look for that and subscribe for periodic updates and information impacting the legal aspects of law enforcement. A lot going on at Broadcast Blue, and I would like for you to be aware of all of that. And also a lot going on with Leah One, on-demand e-learning courses, live webinar training. We're going to start, and starting in August, we're going to do live webinar training sessions where it's you get a certificate and records are tracked and maintained through the LMS. We also do live instruction at your particular facility, just like I'll be doing this Friday at the National Conservation Training Center for the National Park Service. And we have live offerings at central sites. And the first one we've got lined up is for this September. And September 18th and 19th, I will be at the Crystal City Embassy Suites conducting a two-day CLETL, a continuing legal education training course live at the facility there. And you can find out more about it at www.lea.one, Leah One. Our name is our website address. And or you can email me, bruce@broadcast.blue, and I'd be happy to tell you all about it. Thank you so much for what you do, and I will see you again next week here on Bruce's Brown Bag Wednesday webinar.